I want to direct your attention to start with at the bulletin where it says gospel reading, where it says Luke 9, 28 through 36, and then you see the brackets, and it has 37 to 43. The lectionary, the assigned lectionary passage, the gospel passage for this Sunday, is printed like that. And what that means is verses 28 through 36, definitely read that. And then they offer for your suggested interest that you might also want to read the continuing passages there, 37 through 43. As you know, I'm a big believer that sometimes the best way to interpret a story is to see what lies on either side of that story, because these gospel writers were really smart, and they tried to make a lot of connections that sometimes we miss. So I will be reading that entire passage. Now about 8 days after these sayings, Jesus took with him Peter and John and James and went up on the mountain to pray. And while he was praying, the appearance of his face changed and his clothes became dazzling white. Suddenly they saw two men, Moses and Elijah, talking to him. They appeared in glory and were speaking of his departure, which he was about to accomplish at Jerusalem. Now, Peter and his companions were weighed down with sleep, but since they had stayed awake, they saw his glory and the two men who stood with him. Just as they were leaving him, Peter said to Jesus, "Master, it is good for us to be here. Let us make three dwellings, one for you, and one for Moses, and one for Elijah," not knowing what he said. While he was saying this, a cloud came and overshadowed them, and they were terrified as they entered the cloud. Then from the cloud came a voice that said, "This is my son, my chosen. Listen to him." When the voice had spoken, Jesus was found alone, and they kept silent, and in those days told no one of any of the things they had seen. On the next day, when they had come down from the mountain, a great crowd met them. Just then a man from the crowd shouted, "Teacher, I beg you to look at my son. He is my only child." Suddenly a spirit seizes him, and all at once he shrieks. It convulses him until he foams at the mouth. It mauls him and will scarcely leave him. "I begged your disciples to cast it out, but they could not." Jesus answered, "You faithless and perverse generation, how much longer must I be with you and bear with you? Bring your son here." While he was coming, the demon dashed him to the ground in convulsions, but Jesus rebuked the unclean spirit, healed the boy, and gave him back to his father. And all were astounded at the greatness of God. God bless the reading and the hearing of this word. Amen. Riddle me this. I have preached on this biblical story known as the Transfiguration of Jesus. Let me start that again. I have not preached on this biblical story since I have been your pastor. However, you have heard me preach on this story before. How is that possible? Any ideas? Perhaps someone on the last pastor nominating committee might know the answer. The sermon was entitled, "Don't Just Do Something, Stand There." And I preached it from this pulpit on this very Sunday, 8 years ago. It was my candidating sermon, after which there was a congregational meeting where you voted whether or not to extend to me a call to be your pastor. And I began that sermon by bemoaning the fact that the story of the Transfiguration just happened to be that week's assigned lectionary passage. Bad luck of the draw. And interestingly, in the subsequent 7 years, I have found something else to preach about on this Sunday. And this is the last Sunday of the season of Epiphany. So it's probably time to return again to this indeed bizarre story to see what relevance it just might have for the church and for our lives today. The story was obviously important to the early church in that it is recorded in all three Gospels of Matthew, Mark, and Luke. And though not identical, they're very similar. So here's a quick review. Jesus goes up an unnamed mountain with three of his disciples, Peter, James, and his brother John. And as Jesus is praying, he is somehow transformed. The Greek word is metamorphosis. And the appearance of his face changes and his clothes become a dazzling white. And suddenly standing next to Jesus and talking with him are Moses, the great lawgiver, and Elijah, the great prophet. This reveals how Jesus is indeed a continuation of these two great traditions in Israel's faith, the law and the prophets. Peter quickly offers to build three dwelling places for them. But he's interrupted, however, when a cloud mysteriously comes and overshadows the terrified disciples. And echoing the words heard at Jesus' baptism, a voice calls out from the cloud, "This is my son, the chosen," or in other translations, the beloved. Yet on this occasion, a command is added. Listen to him. More on that in a moment. When the voice had spoken, Jesus is found to be alone, and the three disciples decide, perhaps wisely, not to share this experience with anyone. And to this day, is it not hard to share your spiritual experiences with someone else? Now, crucial to a fuller interpretation of this transfiguration story is what happens next. The next day, they all come down from the mountain and immediately encounter a man who informs them that his only son suffers from a spirit that causes him to have very violent seizures. The father reveals that the other disciples who had not gone up the mountain with Jesus were not able to heal him. So Jesus then heals the man's son, and it says, all were astonished at the greatness of God. Now Luke's primary purpose for this story of the transfiguration is to continue to reveal Jesus' identity as the Son of God. But it also reveals a lot of other heady theological stuff that I am not going to go into this morning, including baptism, the foreshadowing of Jesus' death and resurrection, and the apocalyptic hope that comes with all of that. I want to focus instead on another point, one that you may have heard something about before, and that's mountaintop experiences aren't meant to last. Peter, in his desire to build three dwelling places, wanted the experience to last. And who can blame him? When you or I have an unexplainable spiritual experience, a feeling that we have connected with the sacred presence in our midst, we want the moment to last as long as it can. And after spending a week on the ancient Celtic Scottish island of Iona last year during my sabbatical, I did indeed daydream about what it would be like to live there permanently. But alas, that's not the plan of life. Jesus basically tells his disciples and us that we cannot stay up on the mountaintop. We must get back down to the valley where there is a world in need. And though often associated with specific geographical locations, like a real mountaintop or places like Iona, a thin place where it is perceived to have a distance so small between the material and the spiritual, but that can be any place at any time. And some of that even happens here during a service of worship. It doesn't take long to realize that those special God moments all are too quickly followed by real life. That's the routine, ordinary, day-to-day life that we experience back down here in the valley, living life in the trenches, if you will. That's, you know, just part of the sacred journey that we all travel. But the hope is that those noticeable spiritual moments empower us for living life,
and more specifically for the ministry to which you and our congregation is called. That's why it is no accident that all three of those gospel writers immediately followed the story of the Transfiguration with a tale of agony experienced by a father and his son. When read together, we realize that while some are in the midst of a mountain, someone else is experiencing dire need. As Debbie Thomas posted in a blog just this week, "The truth is that my mountain is right next to your valley," or vice versa. In other words, as she phrases it, the truth is that it is entirely possible for you to sit in church on Sunday morning and bask in the sweet presence of God's Spirit while one pew over I cry my eyes out because the ache of God's absence feels unbearable. And expanding this globally, she states, or asks, do we not, in the privileged West, occupy so many mountains while our brothers and sisters in other parts of the world dwells in the valleys of hunger, warfare, violence, and abuse? Yet, do we not at the same time experience valleys peculiar to modern 21st century life? Isolation, anxiety, depression, frenzy. While many who have less by the way of material comfort enjoy the mountaintops of more nourishing cultural traditions and communities. This is just the world that you and I live in. And it is the challenge that we face as individuals and as a congregation. Can we hold the mountain and the valley in faithful tension with each other, denying neither and embracing both? Can we do this hard work out of pure love for each other so that no one among us, not the joyous one, not the anguished one, not the beloved one, not the broken one, ever is truly alone? Suffering and its myriad of forms is real. But the good news is that Jesus comes down from the mountain. The good news is that God dwells among us and within us, not out there somewhere. And as God uses and inspires you and me to minister to those in need, God can also and does inspire and empower others to minister to you when you are in need. And that's our desire as we live out what it means to be this particular community of faith known as College Hill. And when it comes to mountaintop experiences, remember that since the sacred presence of God is everywhere and in all things, that sense of connection can be found, for example, in the beauty of creation that is all around us and our ability to apprehend it. It can be found in close encounters with new life and, yes, with death. And praying and meditating in special ways during periods of suffering, and even in church liturgies and music. And perhaps we can be encouraged and empowered in all of this by recalling the words that came to the disciples from God from that cloud on the mountain. Interestingly, after the words, "This is my son, the chosen," comes the only recorded command in the New Testament that is spoken directly by God to humans. God adds and commands, "Listen to him." These words, "listen to him," direct us to the understanding that being a follower of Jesus means not only doing what Jesus does, but also we are to listen to what Jesus says. And unlike Peter, who felt he had to immediately do something after experiencing the presence of God, we are reminded that sometimes that the best response is simply to stand in awe. Yes, there is a time to act, and we talk about that every week. But there's also a time for us overachievers to pause in humble worship when we recognize we are in the presence of God. So Transfiguration Sunday marks the end of another liturgical season. Having seen the light of Epiphany, we are preparing now for the long darkness of Lent. And I don't know what voices will speak to us in the wilderness. Maybe you'll hear glory. Maybe I'll hear agony, or vice versa. But hopefully, we will hear each other. And again, sometimes it may be best to take action, and sometimes it may be best to simply listen. The purpose, whether on the mountain or in the valley, is to be transformed by the presence of God that is always among us and within us. You know, I don't think I'll wait another 8 years to return to this story. Amen.